Michigan, Layla, Alexander. Radio Baldy is broadcast at the same time in Chicago on WJJG 1530 AM from 7 to 8 Central Time on Radio Chicagoland, hosted by Ray Hanania. Our call-in numbers in the Dearborn region are 248-557-3300 or in Chicago at 708-493-1530. Go to RadioBaldy.com for contact information and show guests. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues with your hosts, Layla Al-Husseini and Ray Hanania.
And welcome to Radio Baldy. I'm Ray Hanania. This morning on Friday, July 13th, it is 8 a.m. And it looks like it's going to be a beautiful day in Detroit, just like in Chicago. Your temperature's up there at 89 degrees today. And in Chicago, it'll be at 90. So it's a little bit cooler by you. Our website is radiobaldy.com. Our number is 248-557-3300. If you're in the Detroit area or any place, you can call in. But if you can listen to us online, you can go to radiobaldy.com. Or, of course, you can listen to us at WNZK AM 690 in the Detroit land area. We're going to have a couple guests on. The first one will be Arif Asaf. He's a writer with in New Jersey, and he's going to be talking about this market food scam, you know, especially with Ramadan coming up next week. There's Israeli settlers that have combined their efforts with an Israeli company. I think it's called Hadik Laim, which is an Israeli date growers cooperative. And it's interesting because what they do is they take grapes from the occupied West Bank and they resell them as dates from Israel, or without even saying where they're from. They don't even put Israel on it. They put Jordan River, a product, sometimes product of Israel, Jordan River, or King Solomon's dates. They put all kinds of names on it. And the point is to get Arabs and Muslims to buy these dates because Majdul, or dates in Arabic, are especially favored during Ramadan by Muslims and also by many Christians. We love dates. I want to bring on our friend and author, Arif Asaf. He's the president of the American Arab Forum. It's based in Paterson, New Jersey. He specializes in Arab and Muslim American affairs. He has a PhD in international law and political science. And he's one of our, I think he's our coordinator in New Jersey for the National American Arab Journalists Association. Arif, welcome to the program at Radio Baldy this morning.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks, Harry.
You had a, of course, people can go to, they can look up connect.nj.com and look up Arif's columns online, or go to our website at Radio Baldy, or the Arab Writers Group blog, where a lot of his columns and other columns are posted. But he had a great column this week, and I thought it was interesting that, you know, maybe we could kind of explore it. It's called Israeli Settlements Dates Violate U.S. Laws and Defraud Consumers. Arif, tell us what's happening with dates and why is it important now with Ramadan coming up?
Well, it's important because Ramadan is coming up, that we discuss this issue and try to bring it to a resolution. It's also important because dates is a major commodity that Israel is trying to control by its production and by its marketing and distribution of the fruit worldwide.
And they're taking these dates, they're harvesting them from the West Bank, which is which has illegal settlements. It was illegally occupied by Israel in violation of international law. Doesn't this fit into foreign countries that go in and like almost Iraq going into Kuwait, capturing Kuwait, and then exploiting its resources for its own personal gain, and And I guess this is the most shocking thing, and you know, you can, I'd love for you to talk about this. They don't even, they hide the fact. They're not even honest about it. These Israeli settler date growers, they want to mislead people, don't they, into thinking that, you know, hey, these are good to buy if you're Muslim or Arab, and, you know, to use them during Ramadan.
Well, exactly. This is the gist of my column for in the Star Ledger this week. It is about deceiving consumers and also, more importantly, violating U.S. laws. Deceiving consumers by not indicating where these products were manufactured or produced or farmed. And as you may know, with other products, this could have serious repercussions if we don't know where certain products are manufactured and there are health concerns or warnings, and we're consuming them and we're assuming that they're healthy. But it turns out that there were some serious issues as far as disease and other things. So when they present these dates to us without indicating where they were farmed or produced, then not only that we are at risk, but also they are violating U.S. laws, which is very specific about indicating country of origin information about such products. We have, to that extent, you know, they're both deceiving American consumers and, more importantly, violating U.S. laws. And those two prongs of this issue are being addressed, and I have taken this matter to the United States Department of Agriculture as well as the U.S. Customs and Border Control, with whom I just had very fruitful conversations over the past days after reading my piece in the Star Ledger.
And this is where the power of media comes in, doesn't it? I mean, and a lot of American Arabs and Muslims, you know, they understand and they recognize the media as being negative and hateful, but they don't recognize the ability to manipulate and influence and add our voice to the media. And when you do that, you can then use that platform to influence government. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, by our action to go ahead and publicize this matter, which, by the way, at least in the New Jersey area, New York area, it has been an open secret. Everyone knew that these they were produced in Israeli-controlled settlements.
And nobody cared, right, until you started writing about it.
Or there was some kind of indifference, partly because there was no indication where they were made. So how do you know they were made in Israel or not? And secondly, they are definitely high quality. And they're definitely undermining, in terms of price measure, the other brands sold in the stores. So people will buy them because they're definitely cheaper, especially for the quality of the dates. So this is one way to essentially dump excess amount of produce to kill not only imports from other countries, but as has happened with Israeli, with Palestinian dates as well, which is another aspect of the story. I'm trying to essentially take the lead, and I believe I have done that. And the fact that the United States Department of Agriculture has recognized the void and the violation inherent in this transaction, they have assigned a certain number of field investigators who will proceed on a nationwide basis to follow through to the source of these dates, how they come into the States, who is importing them, and whether there are international violations in addition to U.S. violations. So what we're trying to do is that we want to make sure that the U.S. consumer is fully aware where these products are made, and then to have the choice to decide whether they should buy them or not. I am, of course, very keen and aware, of course, of the issue of boycott and divestment and how the U.S. government and U.S. politicians look at this. I'm not really necessarily advocating for that publicly. It is my personal choice, of course, not to buy Israeli products.
Right.
To continue to do that. But as you know, if we go on this angle and say we want to boycott Israeli products, regardless of where they were made, we stand to face stiff opposition from many sources.
Right. In many states, for example, in the United States.
As you have referred me to about Michigan and others, there are specific requirements that you cannot discriminate against Israeli products, even if they were made in Israeli-controlled or built settlements in illegally occupied West Bank.
Well, let me ask you, Arif, about this issue, because it sounds like there are two issues. One issue is that the Israelis are, the settlers, are harvesting dates from stolen property and off of illegal settlements in the West Bank, which are occupied and recognized by the United States as occupied territories and illegal settlements. And then the second issue, so that's a violation of the law. And the second issue, though, is that the distinction between, the occupied territories and also mislabeling foods. In other words, U.S. law is very clear that says that if you're going to import a product, you have to be honest and upfront about where this product is coming from. So they're really violating two laws. One, they're stealing from the occupied territories, correct? And two, they're lying about, they're trying to disguise, they're hiding. Which aspect of that, those two, do you think the U.S. government is most concerned about?
Well, it's the violation of what is known in legalese as COOL, country of origin labeling requirements. And there are stiff penalties and very strict requirements that are mandated to be adhered to by every and all importers of any product into the United States. Apparently, there's some void, something missing at the U.S. border and control where these products are allowed to come into the U.S. without indicating where they are produced. And they're being sold into the U.S., specifically, of course, targeted to Arab and Muslim stores. And you can go in Paris and New Jersey, and I'm sure other towns around the country, especially now with Ramadan approaching, and you will see literally tons of these products sold. And I just need to, for your reader, for your listeners' attention, to recognize that specifically two brand names that are most popular. One is called Select Jordan Valley Dates, and the other is called King Solomon. They generally come in red boxes, beautifully choreographed, and the largest box is around 11 pounds, and it sells for about $55 to $60.
And no place do they really say that they're a product of Israeli settlements or Israel, do they?
We have, I've visited 11 stores in the state of New Jersey. Each one had the same product without indicating where they were made.
Were they Arab stores or just regular
stores? Non-Arab as well. Now, and you'll find similar, but not the same brand name, similar dates in other shopping centers such as AMP and others, and even Costco, where it will indicate they were a product of Israel.
But, right. And then there's, as we know, one of our sponsors, Ziad Brothers, by the way, produces dates. And they specifically state made in Palestine.
Yes.
In the West Bank. Because so, I mean, if it doesn't say where it's from, that's your first indicator that there may be something suspect with it, correct?
Exactly, yes. And that's where, you know, the source of our claim is that, first of all, you know, the violation of the intent and the spirit of the U.S. laws concerning import of perishable and other items. But secondly, as consumers, we are also being essentially lied to or deceived intentionally.
Right.
This was not just a misprint or in one delivery, one shipment. This is consistent for so many years. And we want to bring a stop to it. And we were promised by those in government right now that they, after the investigation, if that's the decision, that they will confiscate and mandate stiff penalties and require adherence to U.S. laws moving forward. Now, we know that there may be some, I don't say conspiracy, but maybe some indifference by Arab importers who have contracted with Israeli producers to bring this into Arab markets, fully aware that if they were to place the name of Israel on the package, that they may not be sold. And they have essentially maybe agreed not to have made in Israel shown on the package. So it is not entirely the mistake or the error or the...
It's not a mistake, in other words. It's being intentional.
And it is also our importers, and some of them are Arab importers, who are essentially conspiring with Israeli producers and marketers to make sure that these products come into Arab and Muslim stores, which, as you know, is going to probably, I would say, Arabs and Muslims may consume the most amount of dates, especially because, at least for Muslims, it's a religious duty and it's a ritual where Muslims are required and encouraged to eat dates every day during the fasting month of Ramadan.
We're talking with Arif Asaf. He's a writer based in Paterson, New Jersey, a good friend of ours here at Radio Bality, and he's written a very interesting column about the really the deceit from Israeli settlers in Israel, one, violating the ethical and moral aspects of the occupation, which is illegal, and the more important one, I think, is they're lying to Americans by disguising where these dates are coming from. You're listening to Radio Bality here at WNZK AM 690. You can also go to our website at radiobality.com, or you can also go to Radio Aramica at radioaramica.com. You can listen using your cell phone by dialing 712-432-8008. All of that information is on our website at radiobality.com. It seems to me, Arif, that we could go two ways with it. I support the boycott of Israeli settlements. Now, my personal life, I don't boycott the Israel because I believe in two states, and I think that it would be wrong. And you know, whether I'm being naive or not, I'm hoping that eventually we'll have compromise. But that's one issue. The other issue, to me, is one that I think every American could rally around, regardless of how they feel about the Middle East conflict. Lying on your packaging, misleading on your packaging, not telling people where it is. If I saw a product and it specifically stated that it was made in the occupied West Bank, or even if they want to say Judea and Samaria, which is the racist Israeli term, you know, for the West Bank, I would at least be able to make the choice. In this case, just looking at it, you can't make the choice, can you?
This is our expectation. We believe it is our right to be fully informed about the manufacturing or production of anything that we buy. It is the U.S. law, and we think all Americans, not only Arabs and Muslims, should be concerned about this. Because as I said, there has been instances where health issues were brought up. When certain items such as shellfish and others were imported into the U.S. and mislabeled as the product of another country, because the one country had issues with the U.S., they were not allowing them to import, and this specific country, I'm not going to mention their name, they decided to sell it to the U.S. through another country with the same health concerns still present in the product. So this issue, the U.S. Customs and Control takes very seriously, and we believe in this instance they will. I'm hoping that the political environment will not be overwhelming for them, that they will decide to take it easy or not to give it the full attention, which case will be another issue for us to really up the ante on this. But we believe so far that they will deal with this on a professional basis where the law has been violated and try to find a resolution to it. Meanwhile, until then, we are urging all of our friends and readers and writers and everybody else to push for the idea that you should not buy anything that doesn't show where it was made, regardless whether it's dates or anything else. It's just not the smart decision to do.
Are there other products that the Israeli settlers are trying to sell in the U.S. and, you know, that they're stealing from the West Bank? Do we know of any other products that they're involved with?
I'm not sure, but it is possible, because
if they're doing this, they're probably doing it with everything.
Absolutely. I'm sure, as you know, with the Hava perfumes and some other health products that they are producing in the West Bank as well. Specifically to the dates issue, if you really read, there is a report on that, how they have abused Palestinian children and using them to collect and pick these dates.
So these Israeli settlers who are racist, they hate Arabs, they hate Muslims, they hate Christians, yet to make money, they'll employ and use, Palestinian kids or even Palestinians, right? Because, people are desperate in, the Palestinian Christians and Muslims, they're desperate to survive. So do we blame the Palestinians who are forced to work because of their circumstances on these illegal settlements?
No, you can't really, because you don't have alternative for them. Unfortunately, I mean, this is a difficult issue for Palestinians, which they have long time attempted to, you know, face up to. You know, do you want to support the occupation that is taking away your land? But at the same time, what else can you do? How would you survive when there are no other opportunities whatsoever? And this is not, you know, as you know, this has been going for 45 years. So if it was a year or a month, people could have survived or waited or even struggled. And but, you know, this is now going to the third decade now. And so they have no choice but to whatever they can find jobs to find them and you go for them. But and this gives the Israelis an opportunity to take advantage of Palestinians, because if it's a controlled market, they pay them the least amount of money and they abuse them in terms of the work rules and conditions. I should say about that the divestment and boycott, in Europe it's much more prevalent, the issue of boycotting settlement products, more so than in the U.S. As you know, the U.S. has very strict laws which were passed by very friendly Congress to Israel that says you cannot distinguish between Israeli products and Israeli settlement products. But in Europe, this is a lively discussion there, and I've already had contacts with people from there about my piece, and they are using it essentially to generate more interest and excitement, especially during the month of Ramadan, to urge consumers and to urge mosques and other centers to pay attention to the product and to patronize products from other countries. And you do have other alternatives. There are excellent dates made in Tunisia and as you said, from Palestine. But Tunisia and Turkey have and also South Africa, which, by the way, is a questionable also destination, because I, from my information, I learned that Israel also sells or markets as far as through South Africa to Arab countries and Muslim
countries. So they go through South Africa to sell to the Arab countries, in other words.
Exactly, yes. And the same thing here now is happening, I believe. They're beginning to do that, to sell it to American companies, which will claim that it is packaged in the U.S. But that still does not hide or eliminate the requirement that you must indicate where the product was manufactured or produced. Because especially if it's, we're talking about dates, where you don't do anything to it. You just bring it and sell it. If it was some other product where you can modify it or process it, then you can claim that it was done in the U.S. But with dates specifically, as a perishable fruit, there's not much you can do to it. You bring it, you store it, and then you sell it. So you cannot claim it is produced in California, even though you're distributing through a California-based company. But they're trying whatever they can, because they know this is a captive market that they're trying to make their money on. And we haven't done anything about it for the last, I don't know, decade or more. But I think starting this week, this will be a turning point, and hopefully with support from our consumers, Arab, Muslim, and others, they will begin to feel the impact of our decision that we want to be informed of these products and how they were manufactured, and if there are any concerns about them, and more importantly, to meet U.S. laws. All we are asking for is to be treated equally and not to be deceived by any product marketing company, whether it's U.S. or others.
We're talking with Araf Asaf. He's a journalist and a writer in New Jersey who's written a wonderful piece exposing some of the criminal activities of the Israeli settlers, disguising products that they're stealing from the occupied West Bank. And they knowingly are stealing it, and they know there's something wrong with it because they won't say where the products are from, in the hopes that the consumers, mainly Arabs and Muslims in the United States and elsewhere, will mistakenly buy these products not realizing that they've been taken from West Bank areas. RF, and by the way, our number is 248-557-3300 if you want to join in on the conversation. RF, one last important question, I think. This is a strategic question, and I wonder what you think about it. It would be easy for you and me and other American Arabs to yell and scream about the BDS, the boycott, and say, we have to boycott this. Let's boycott Israel. Let's boycott the settlements. And then we engage in a battle over whether boycotts are good or bad with the American public. that seems to me the wrong strategy, that the right strategy is to go to the American public, and I think you pointed this out in your writing, and argue that, listen, regardless of how you feel about the issue of a boycott or illegal settlements, the first battle is the Israelis who are marketing and harvesting this product are being deceitful, that that's harmful to Americans, that they're selling products without telling you where it's from. And if you don't know where it's from, you can't make an educated decision about a product you want to buy. And that's how we have problems in this country. Should we set aside the boycott issue to win the first battle, or should we just go headstrong and argue the boycott regardless of the issue of this is just immoral to not label where a product is coming from?
Yeah. Well, Ray, if you, I'm sure you read my piece and you can discern from my direction that I didn't push for the idea of boycott as being the premise of my argument that we should not be buying these products, because my full understanding of the political risk or considerations inherent in boycott issues. So I'm taking the venue, the legal venue, which I think is the more productive one, and that, indicating first that there's a violation of U.S. custom and import laws, and secondly, there are specific concerns about consumers not being fully informed of products that they may buy at the shelf of their local store.
Right.
And I think addressing it at this local level, where we do have strong legal foundation on which to base our argument.
I agree with you.
I think we stand to win on this case. And people can take it, of course, interpreted, as another measure of boycott, but that's their own interpretation. For me, the specific concern I have is that these products meet U.S. laws. And if they do, then consumers will have a right and opportunity to make educated decision on how they spend their money.
I agree with you, RF, that the real issue is strategy and being strategic, rather than being emotional. In principle, we should boycott products like this because they're being stolen. And we should do that not just from products manufactured in the West Bank, but from products from countries all over the world that have been occupied or, where governments are stealing. In principle, we should be against it. But to win the argument, though, we have to be strategic as Arabs because of the way we are caught up in this country with the influence that Israel has. Just saying the word boycott suddenly makes it sound like there's something wrong. But if you go to an American, as you rightly point out, and that's why I brought it up, I really want listeners to understand this, that you pointed out a very important strategic move, that we should approach it from the standpoint of how do we prevent this from happening, not from the standpoint of what makes us feel good. We want to stop this. And the best way to stop it is to go to Americans and say, hey, they're lying about where they're not telling you where this is coming from. That's illegal.
Yeah.
And once you force them to do that, then the issue of the boycott becomes, almost second nature. Because if I see a product that says it was produced by Israelis in the West Bank, you don't need to tell me to boycott it. I'm not going to buy it.
Well, we assume this will be the conclusion or the direct outcome of such legal maneuvering if successful. But we cannot go the boycott way first unless we can prove on the legal grounds that this is violating U.S. laws. And I think we have established with them, we have shown them the statutes and the regulations, and they have agreed with us. Yes, there is a strong argument that can be argued here about the legality of these products because I showed them pictures, videotape of these brand names, and phone call records I've had with distributors and importers. So immediately after 3 days of investigation, they came back to us and saying, we believe there is a strong argument here and foundation for us to pursue this matter, and we thank you for bringing it to our attention, and we will update you on our progress. What's going to happen now, I was told that there will be some kind of silence, there will be no communication to us from them until they arrive at their conclusion, which could take a month or two or three. I had, of course, hoped that it would be more expedient and faster in their processing of the claim, but I'm told the way the government functions, it will take more time. So if it's not for this year, it will be definitely for next year's season. But even, you know, regardless of that, consumers now that they are aware of the issue, can make a more informed decision, and this will be definitely helpful if they were to call and complain about these products to their local consumer departments or federal agencies or others, or to the store owners, to express to them that, you know, they're concerned. Why would you be selling me a product you don't know, or I don't know where it came from? Please consider replacing it with something else. This grassroots effort would definitely propel national legislation and action. So while I try to reach at the top, I think consumers can have just as a major impact as I did, even more if they start from the bottom up by refusing to buy these products, and more importantly, informing the owners of the small shops and the big shops why they are not buying these products. This will have the most impactful result that we are hoping to achieve.
And final thought, RF, and we appreciate you coming on board this morning to explain this story. It really is now on the backs of Arabs and Muslims to do the right thing, to make a conscious, educated decision to not allow this injustice to continue. And that means, you know, insisting that dates be identified, because you're right, that's one of the products. But every product they buy, we just shouldn't buy a product that's improperly labeled, that doesn't say where it comes from. If it says a product of Palestine on it, I think it's safe to assume that it's being made in Palestine. And we should tell our listeners should go to these stores and say, wait a minute, where are these dates, you know, purchased? And why doesn't it say on the box where they're from? RF, where can our listeners go to read your columns? We have this column listed on our website at radioballady.com. But if they want to read your columns, where should they go?
Well, the main source, the permanent source, of course, is our website of our organization, American Arab Forum. And the link for that is www.aaf, as in Frank, USA.org, or they can go on the Star Ledger's website, which is NJ.com, and search for my name, Arif Assaf, and they will find the article and also previous articles. Before you let me go, I just remind your listeners that anything that doesn't have a country of origin should be considered suspect. And when it comes to dates, specifically look for Jordan Select Valley dates and King Solomon, anything that says Majhul or Majdul, which, by the way, is from the Arabic word Majhul, which means unknown, which is the name of these kind of dates that was given to them because nobody knew what they are, so they call them unknown from the Arabic word Majhul. So you see different pronunciation or spelling of it, Majdul, Majhul, something, but it comes from the Arabic word Majhul. So please.
But the key, though, is because there are some dates that are produced in Palestine that are done by Arabs and Palestinians. They'll all say Majdul, though.
Yeah, they do indicate clearly where they're produced. There are also some dates made, farmed in California, and they're also Majdul or Majdul. So these are nothing wrong with them, and there are other choices customers and consumers have. Instead of buying products without point of origin indicated, that they can choose other countries or other dates made somewhere else where information is fully available, as it should be by law.
All right, Arif Assaf, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you here at Radio Ballady. Look forward to talking to you again. I'm Ray Hanania. This is Radio Ballady at WNZK AM 690, July 13th, Friday. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to shift gears and talk about the background on the Member of Parliament in Jordan who pulled out a gun after throwing a shoe at an activist he was debating live on Jordanian TV. We'll talk about that with our friend Ali Yunus, who'll be on in a few minutes. Right now, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
Jake's Candy. 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
Whether it's McLuba, Wadak Dawali, Tabbouleh, Hummus, Mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
Good news. As of November 17th, Immigration has been given new instructions to review and close all pending cases. If you're in immigration proceedings, call attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Free consultation for Michigan residents. Mention Radio Baladi. For the latest in immigration law, Stephen Lagana specializes in immigration and federal court proceedings. Visas of all kinds, deportation, court appeals, open refugee status, and much more. All immigration cases are currently pending review. It's time to get the right attorney working for you. Call immigration attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Mention Radio Baladi. That's 617-283-1018. The American Muslim Center works for the community. It establishes goodness, virtue, and develops relationships between the Muslim communities as well as regional and national non-Muslim communities. The American Muslim Center on Outer Drive in Dearborn. Call 313-565-9314 or visit AmericanMuslimCenter.org.
SebileMedia.com is a wellspring of media arts. SebileMedia.com tells God's story through short films, drama, poetry, music, and the internet. And you have free media downloads. Go to SebileMedia.com and listen to Nasheed, based on the Psalms of the Prophet David, for free downloads in several Arabic dialects of stories, short films, poetry, and music. Go to SebileMedia.com.
And welcome back to Radio Baladi. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690 in Detroit. We're here every Friday morning in Detroit at 8 a.m. You could listen to us live on radio, of course, or you could go online at www.radiobaladi.com or by dialing 712-432-8008. You can listen on your cell phone. For more information on that, visit radioaramica.com. to get details on how you can use your cell phone to do that. Right now I'm going to shift gears and we're going to talk about the Jordanian TV show last week, in which a member of the Jordanian parliament, Mohammed Shawabka, is shown debating an issue with a host and another activist, former member of the Jordanian parliament, sitting across from him. He got up, I guess, in the heat of the argument. You probably saw this video all over TV and the internet. He threw his shoe. The activists that he was arguing with knocked over the table. They started yelling. And then this member of parliament, Mohammed Shawabka, pulls out a silver revolver and waves it in the air. And Ali Younis, who is an award-winning columnist, actually did some research on who this guy, this Jordanian member of parliament is, Mohammed Shawabka. Ali, welcome to the program this morning.
Thank you, Ray.
Al, what did we learn? What did you learn about this instant celebrity who's, you know, Mohammed Shawabka. What do we know about him?
Well, Mohammed Shawabka, although he, as you rightly said, he has become an innocent celebrity throughout the world for waving a gun on a talk show, probably the first and shocking event, was an innocent celebrity as well in New Mexico, Santa Fe, New Mexico, where he had lived for many, many years, and apparently who is an Arab American, an American citizen, and who owned and operated several jewelry stores in Santa Fe, and had run into troubles with the law in that state many years before, dates back to the 90s.
And why did he go to Jordan? I mean, is it just a typical, American Arab who decided to go back to his homeland and get engaged in government, or,
yes, I'll just give you a little background. Shawabka and his brothers, they owned and operated five stores. One of them returned back to Jordan, Khalid Shawabka, and unfortunately and sadly, he died in Jordan in a traffic accident. But they operated stores that sell, some of them called Diva Diamonds, and the different names of those stores, that they changed names frequently because they were indicted and they were investigated for selling Native American jewelry under the pretense that it was original Native American jewelry made by the Navajo tribes, when it turned out to be that they were selling fake jewelry.
Well, the government accused them of that, correct?
Yes, the government accused them of that, and they were investigated, and they were not found guilty, technically speaking, because they settled out of court and they paid fines over $200,000 in some of these cases, and restitutions, fines, and the cost of investigation to the state. So Mohammed Shawabka apparently, over the years, had accumulated a large wealth, because my sources in Jordan told me that he was a millionaire in Jordan, and he had come from America as a millionaire, and instantaneously he became a member of parliament. That tells you a lot about the Jordanian politics.
Right.
Money talks. It's not that he used his money to mount an election campaign like many, many millionaires Americans who do here, but my sources say that essentially that he bought the Parliament, and that's not unusual for Jordanian politics, which I have written a lot about, given that the deep-seated corruption within the security agencies of that country that put members of Parliament who are supporters of the Mukhabarat and supporters of the government in order to pass laws and legislation that supports the government intentions, which essentially not to have a political or democratic reform.
Yeah, and the interesting thing for that I thought when you and I were talking about this was, here's a guy who is an Arab who left Jordan, or his family left Jordan. I don't know if he was born in Jordan and then came to the United States. But like many Arabs, he did come to the United States, or his family came to the United States. And, he becomes a businessman here, good, bad, or whatever happens to him. And then he goes back to Jordan, and yet this anger issue that comes out, where does that come from? I mean, is that like Arab cultural anger, or is it an anger that is bred here in the United States, by Arabs who are just so oppressed, in this country?
Well, you might say that if it was an isolated case in Jordanian politics, but,
there were a lot of things like this that have happened where they pulled guns out.
In Jordan nowadays, they dominate the news that violence within colleges and universities, that tribal violence over, according to the police to a press report, over a girl, that erupt in violence throughout the university that involves tribal tribes and clans that, extend outside the university. The latest was in the University of Muta, south of Jordan, in the town of Karak, which is about maybe 100 miles south of Amman. A riot erupted between tribes that used machine guns and guns and violence over frivolous things, over a girl, over somebody looked at somebody else's, over clannish dominance in that region. And that happened in the University of Jordan in Amman and some other universities in the north of Amman, Yarmouk University or Science and Technology University. So it has become a prevalence of violence within the Jordanian society manifested within the universities. You know, ironically, this is supposed to be the elite of the Jordanian society, the college-educated professionals who would eventually become the leaders of the country. And at the same time, the government itself is, in a way, is not doing anything to stop this, you know, phenomena from happening. My sources in Jordan told me, and I wrote an article on this that is published now about this Shoabke guy, that, you know, the head of the parliament, the speaker of the parliament, even giving gifts of guns to his members of parliament. And many in Jordan accuse this parliament of being rigged, being appointed by the Mukhabarat in order to, you know, stifle reform.
Is that what happens back in Arab democracy, you know, where we all settle back and we drop our guard? I mean, should we worry about stuff like this that's happening? You know, Jordan isn't viewed as a, quote, extremist country. It's viewed as very American and Western. And yet, I've heard more about corruption in Jordan than I've heard in many other countries. Is that what we can expect in Egypt, maybe?
Well, there is, you know, untold stories of corruption throughout the Arab world, but Jordan, you know, has relatively a free press. I mean, not the freest, but has a relatively free press that outside the government-sponsored newspapers or pro-government newspapers, there is, you know, many news websites, opposition groups. So it has somehow a vibrant society, for example, compared to Saudi Arabia or the Gulf, that they don't even have a vibrant society that would even write something, or opposition groups, or even trade unions. So Jordan has all these institutions, civic institutions and press institutions that present what's going on in Jordan to the outside world. And this is healthy. This is a healthy sign. But the fact remains that this member of parliament is part of the symptom. He's not an isolated incident because he feels empowered. You know, imagine a U.S. congressman pulls a gun anywhere, not just on a TV show.
Right.
It would be an uproar. But in Jordan, didn't cause an uproar because, you know, everybody thinks that, although shocking, but people have lost faith in the government of restoring order and, you know, applying the law across the board, not just against, you know, the people who don't have, you know, backing or don't have a lot of money.
Ellie, we got to take a quick break, and you want to hang on for a few minutes? We'll talk a couple more minutes. Okay, hang on one second. I'm talking with Ellie Yunus. Kind of expanded the discussion, but we were looking at that video that's gone viral all over about the Jordanian member of parliament who threw a shoe at the guy he was debating. And you know what? We can't even translate the dialogue, the argument back and forth, because the words are so terrible between the two of them. Say that again, Ellie. Sorry.
We're just throwing each other names over Syria. And, you know, the activist was apparently pro the Syrian regime, nationalist activist, and the Shoabke guy was against that. So they were cussing each other out, and the other activist calling Shoabke as a mafia thief. Because he's accused as such in Jordan.
Oh, my gosh. And it just explains the emotion that comes out in, because the Arab community is divided over this issue with Syria. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with our guest, award-winning columnist Ellie Yunus. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Jake's Candy. 2-for-$1 candy bags and $1 candy bags available. Wholesale and distribution. Jake's Candy has been satisfying the sweet tooth of thousands of people for over a decade. Now providing delivery service to Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton, Ohio, as well as Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and New York City. For New York service, call Sully at 718-213-1264. Or for more information, call Jake's Candy at 248-747-2223. That's 248-747-2223.
Whether it's makluba, warak dawali, tabbouleh, hummus, mensif, or any of more than 1,000 great Middle Eastern recipes, Ziad Brothers Importing is your best source for Mediterranean food products. Ziad Brothers Importing distributes products under the Ziad name and also many other labels, such as Sultan Extra Virgin Olive Oil, and Dana Lebna and Dana Cheese. Try their ready-to-serve microwavable instant side pilafs, including couscous with tomato sauce, roasted green wheat pilaf, cracked wheat pilaf, and rice and lentil pilaf. All tasty, natural, healthy, and authentic Mediterranean dishes from the microwave to the table in minutes. Ziad food products are available at all major food and grocery stores in Dearborn, Chicago, Windsor, Canada, and around the country. If you can't find the product you want, just ask your grocer to stock them. For more information on food or recipes, visit Ziad Brothers Importing online at www.ziad.com. Ziad offers the best Mediterranean food products from our family to yours.
Good news. As of November 17th, Immigration has been given new instructions to review and close all pending cases. If you're in immigration proceedings, call attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Free consultation for Michigan residents. Mention Radio Baladi. For the latest in immigration law, Stephen Lagana specializes in immigration and federal court proceedings, visas of all kinds, deportation, court appeals, open refugee status, and much more. All immigration cases are currently pending. Pending review. It's time to get the right attorney working for you. Call immigration attorney Stephen Lagana at 617-283-1018. Mention Radio Baladi. That's 617-283-1018. Icon Computer Megastore. Mention Radio Baladi for great deals. Computers and laptops from $99. Apple computers from $129. Warranties included. Shipping available. Free layaway plans. Arabic to English keyboards, $5. Mouses, $5. Repairs for iPods, iPads, Apple computers, and PCs. Icon Computer Megastore on Greenfield, north of Warren Avenue in Dearborn. Mention Radio Baladi. Call today, 313-582-3100. 313-582-3100.
And welcome to Radio Baladi. I'm Ray Hanania. It is July 13th. In just about a week, sometime around Thursday or maybe Wednesday night, Thursday or Friday, depending on the exact calibration of the moon, Ramadan will begin. So I'll wish everybody an early Ramadan Mubarak. And you know that it's a major holiday and important religious observance in the Muslim American and Muslim world. Right now I'm talking with Ali Younis, our guest. Ali, this whole thing of Syria, this it's really spread. I mean, the anger and emotions, it's divided the community. This video of the two people arguing on Jordanian TV kind of is the epitome of the level of anger and discourse that's taken place over Syria. What is the issue with Syria?
Well, I think part of the reasons are that in the past 40 years, Syria, you know, has built itself as the vanguard, the standard bearer of Arab nationalism and resistance to the U.S. efforts, U.S., Israeli, Western efforts to dominate the Arab and Muslim world. So this, you know, propaganda or this idea and theory by the Syrian Baath regime that apparently has taken roots among many in the Arab world that who feel indigenous toward the U.S., you know, war in Iraq, support of dictatorship, and other wars, you know, in Libya and Tunisia, and also the lack of progress within the Israeli-Palestinian front and Israeli war in Gaza. So Syria comes across as the last bastion of Arab honor, you know, against those wars and encouragements against the Arab world. You know, the wars in Gaza, they continue the occupation of the Palestinian areas by Israel, and the U.S., you know, negligence, total negligence and aggression against the Arab states. So Syria comes across for many of those, you know, who are supported now as the standard bearer, as the last one. But the facts are totally different because Syria in the Baath Party has never been the way it is describing itself, has cooperated with the U.S. with the war against Iraq, has supported Iran against the war in another Arab country, Iraq, during the 1980s, and at the same time engaged in negotiations with Israel over a peace settlement. So it isn't the way they put themselves as, you know.
So in other words, when the United States says that Syria is an extremist you know, government and country, they're being hypocrites, right? Because it was kind of like with Libya. Didn't the United States come to a resolution of our conflict with Libya and Muammar Gaddafi, and then all of a sudden the protests started and we directly engaged in taking them down? So I don't know, is our word as an American government suspect in the Middle East? I mean, can it be trusted when they say, okay, we shake hands and move on?
Well, not, they're not describing doing an extremist in a religious extremist country. You know, the regime is secular, has had waged war against the Muslim Brotherhood, have massacred thousands, maybe 20 to 30.
Yeah, I'm not defending Syria. I'm just saying that, you know, that at one point, Syria supported the American agenda. And yet, with a blink of an eye, the United States flipped on the government of Syria again. You know, and it just seemed a little contradiction, wasn't it?
Well, because they flipped against Syria. I mean, Barack Obama restored diplomatic relations with Syria.
Right.
You know, Ambassador Ford to Syria. And Syria actually cooperated with the U.S. war against Iraq in 2003 by surrendering many, you know, sometimes, you know, opening the spigot of terrorists into Iraq and sometimes shutting off that spigot.
So they're playing a game then.
Yes. And also they turned back, you know, the Iraqi leaders who fled into Syria, notably Saddam Hussein's sons, Uday and Qusay, when they fled to Syria, they shipped them back to Iraq in order to be killed.
Right.
That's, you know, bowing down to pressure by the U.S. You know, but, you know, the Syrian regime, you know, is surviving at this point because partly the government apparatus, you know, is manned by one particular religious group, and it has, you know, continued the state to be functioning, meaning people are still getting paid. The bureaucrats, and that's critical. And internet is still there. That's critical because if they shut down the internet, if they stop paying, which means the meltdown of the state functions, people will go out to the streets. And
Ali, I'm going to interrupt you because I'm going to ask you one last question because we're just down to the final minute here. Can Bashar al-Assad's regime survive? And they're very tough, but do you think they're going to collapse and be replaced by democracy? What's your prediction real quick?
I predict that Bashar al-Assad regime will be deposed. I think he will fall, but the timing is critical. I think in the long run, he will no longer be in power in Syria because the amount of massacres that he had committed against the Syrian people would be make it impossible for him to rule all over Syria, maybe some parts, but eventually he'll be gone.
All right, my guest, Ali Younes. Ali, we love having you on always. He's an award-winning columnist, and you could read. You write for El Arabia Net all the time.
The English website.
And the English website at El Arabia Net. Ali, thank you for joining us again this morning.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you later. I'm Ray Hanania. This has been Radio Ballady. We want to thank all our sponsors, you especially for listening. Remember, go to RadioBallady.com. to get more information for podcasts. And also on Sunday morning, you can listen to my radio show from 9 to 11 Detroit time by visiting RadioChicagoland.com, where we continue this conversation on Middle East and American issues. I'm Ray Hanania. Have a great week. Happy Ramadan. Ramadan Mubarak. We will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
WNZK has available a few good hours of airtime.